Welcome to the You've Got to Read This podcast, which is part of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Library digital branch. In these recordings, we discuss books we think you're really going to want to check out. I'm Cameron, a librarian at University City Regional Library, and I will be discussing Just Your Type by Phil Catoodle with Stacy Colino.
I'm Christy, a children's librarian at Morrison Regional Library, and I'm going to be talking about An Absolutely Remarkable Thing by Hank Green.
And I'm Kate Hill, a library assistant at University City Regional, and I will be talking about Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuinston. You can find these titles through the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Library catalog. Go to www.cmlibrary.org and choose the green catalog button.
Well, I guess I'll start us off today. So I'm going to be talking about An Absolutely Remarkable Thing, which is a great name for a book. It reminds me of the title, A Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius. That kind of, like, this book is an absolutely remarkable thing. It's a little bit prideful to say name your book that, but that was not the reason I picked it up. I picked it up because I have watched Vlogbrothers for a while, so I know about John Green, and this is his brother, Hank Green. And Hank, this is Hank's first book, and he was a scientist first, and then decided to try writing after this YouTube thing took off.
I'm curious, what pathway of science was he like into?
He was into biology, if I remember correctly.
Okay, cool.
And he works in Wyoming. No, he works in Montana. but he also does a lot of science education. He does SciShow Kids and SciShow Podcasts. So when I saw that he had written a book, I was very interested to see how it compared. I'd read one or two of John Green's books, and while I like them, okay, they're not my favorite in the whole world, but I really, really liked this book by Hank Green. It is for adults, not teens, although older teens would probably find it appealing as well. Set in New York City at the beginning. Our main character's name is April May.
Very
yeah,
nice.
I know.
Plus.
Yeah, and she, of course, is working for some cruddy startup that has her working crazy hours, and she is walking home toward the to get on the subway, and it's at 3 o'clock in the morning, and she comes across a sculpture. Now, April May was originally a art student, and now she's doing like design, which is why she's working for this startup. But as an art student, she sees this, what she believes is a sculpture, on the street. And at first she starts walking past it just like, oh wow, another cool New York thing. And then she's like, wait a minute, somebody spent a lot of time, a lot of energy on creating this beautiful piece of art. So it needs to be looked at and appreciated. So she actually goes back and looks at it, and she goes like, this is like crazy good. So she calls her friend, and his name is Andy. And he has been friends with her and her live-in girlfriend roommate for a long time. But she calls Andy because Andy does a podcast and he records videos. He's into the YouTube thing. And so he comes and he records a YouTube video with her and uploads it very shortly after they record it. He, you know, edits it real fast, throws it up on the internet. When April May wakes up, she has woken up to international fame. Everybody, millions and millions of people have viewed her video because the sculpture that she saw of a giant robot, think Transformers kind of, has actually appeared simultaneously in many dozens of cities across the world simultaneously. And so it's a very strange phenomenon. And
is it all exactly the same robot?
Okay. Yes, it is. It is one robot, but it's also multiple at the same time. So there are interesting little puzzles that have happened. There's music stuff in there. There's all this fun intrigue. But part of a big part of the book is about viral fame, you know, and all of a sudden becoming famous. And what does that do to you and your relationships with other people? How does that change who you see yourself as? How does the world interact with you as that kind of a famous person? She's on the side of, you know, this is amazing and awesome. And these, she calls them Carl. She's the first one to name him. Hey, Carl. So everybody calls them Carls because she called it Carl first. But she wants to know, she thinks that they are great. She thinks that some intelligence has sent them here, and it's amazing, and it's such a great opportunity. But of course, there are the naysayers, and she kind of gets into a super political feud with a guy that thinks that it's terrible and they're scary and we should be protecting ourselves, and you know, these intelligences are very frightening, and why are we doing things that might wake these guys up? So it's kind of the duality between those guys.
That's what I was curious about, is how the public views this, if it's a doom and gloom scenario of what is this going to mean for humanity kind of thing, or is it just like, oh wow, this is cool? So it sounds like it's mixed.
Yeah, it's mixed, and I mean, as humanity would be, it sure. Definitely there'd be people that are scared of it and people that are excited by it. And there's a very interesting thing that happens after April May figures out a certain secret clue that the Carls have left. And then all of a sudden, all of humanity starts having this experience, kind of a shared experience. And it really, in a lot of ways, is kind of like a love song to like how creative and inventive and amazing humanity can be when they work together toward a greater end. And of course, as a library person, I'm all about that.
Sure.
Definitely pick it up. I would say you will fly through it, and I'm already looking forward to his next book.
Sounds awesome. I'm very intrigued by this. I'm kind of processing it as I have listened to you talk about it. It sounds very exciting. It sounds like a lot of the tension is in sort of the, not necessarily like an action robots taking over the world kind of thing. It sounds like a very emotional, like character development, character tension style of book. Is that right?
I would say very strongly so, that the characters are what drives the plot. There's a few very interesting moments that mm-hmm. are really tender. Mm. And if I have to quote one little thing from the book, I'm going to say, beautiful. Because that's a quote. And it's meaningful when it happens.
So did you read it, or did you listen? Is it available on audio?
It's both. I already read it, and then I listened to it on audio later.
All right. So plug for the audio as well as the book itself. Awesome.
Yeah. And the female reader is really good. There is a small section where actually Hank Green reads from Andy's perspective for a little while. But yeah, it's really great.
Awesome.
Was there a resolution at the end, as far as, without giving too much of the plot away, is there a resolution to maybe how these robots came to be?
I need the next book.
Okay, fair enough.
So be warned, if you start it, you will be waiting. Well, great, Christy.
Well, thanks. I hope you guys pick it up.
Okay, and I'm going to talk about Just Your Type, The Ultimate Guide to Eating and Training Right for Your Body Type. And what intrigued me about this book is that we all know that there's a million and one different diet books, different fitness books, and things come and go as fads, and some work, some don't. Some are based on nutrition, some are just something that somebody found to work for a while, and then it may work for other people or not. But this book really kind of spoke to me, because I'm always trying to improve my fitness and eating right and trying to improve how fit I am. But what was intriguing about this is it really looks at your body type as the emphasis for your way of working out and how you eat. And it really covers the three main body types, which I had heard before, but I wasn't quite familiar with. And they're people who are ectomorphs, people who are mesomorphs, and people who are endomorphs. And those are the three main body types, but you can also be a hybrid of each of those. So kind of taking into account your body type and bone structure and how much fat you retain, and everybody's different, it looks at that you can't take four different people and get the same results. And we kind of know that anyway about metabolism, and some people can eat a whole pizza, not gain a pound, other people will gain 5 pounds. So it looks at those kind of differences and gives a really concrete way of, this is what you need to do for this body type, and this is the exercises you need to undertake, and this is the type of foods you need to eat in order to get more results. I haven't tried anything in it yet, but I've read it, and it really, I think, makes a lot of sense to me. So it's something that I do, I want to try very soon and see if it actually gives me results too.
So what kind of like dietary stuff does it address? Does it address like intermittent fasting or like protein diet? What kind of stuff does it talk about?
Absolutely, yeah. So it does talk about fasting. It does talk about protein. It does talk about how much fat you want to eat. So it takes into a lot of account a lot of the other diets like keto and the intermittent fasting. It kind of looks at each of those for the, but it's specific to the body type. So one thing may not work for everybody. And we kind of know that intuitively, I think, but I don't think a lot of people always take that into account. It's like, well, okay, the keto diet's going to work the best for everybody, but it doesn't look at specific body type to really account for that, that not everyone's going to have the same results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it really kind of focuses in on those people who feel like they've tried all the different fads and it hasn't really maintain for them what they want to see in themselves.
Exactly. Those are those specific tweaks that people need to make but don't, because they think, okay, you know, this isn't going to work for everybody the same way, but they get frustrated and defeated when it doesn't. And it gives the example of taking four different people who eat the exact same thing, exercise at the exact same rate, and we, like I said, we all kind of factor in that metabolism is going to be different for everybody. Mm-hmm. But looking at the different ways we can modify, and somebody who runs 5 miles, that may not be effective for their body type. I mean, they might lose weight, but they might be overextending themselves to a point where it actually does harm to their body, because their body is not going to respond the same way.
That's interesting.
But it, like I said, it also accounts for differences in that not everyone's going to be a pure ectomorph or a pure endomorph. You might be a hybrid of both. So kind of looking at, it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, but there's things you can do to modify. So I don't think age is as relevant, although in certain cases it might be important for how much you would exercise. And, of course, we all know metabolism does slow down as you age just naturally, so I think that can be accounted for too. But I think it's more about just, like Kate was just saying, about people who have kind of reach a dead end and are like, why can't I get the same results on this diet as other people? And it's just because you're not taking into account what works best for your particular body.
So we have a thing that we talk about at my work every now and then, and it's, do you eat breakfast? So Do you eat breakfast?
I do. It's more like a protein bar or a cereal bar and yogurt at some point before I have my lunch. You know what? Take that back, because my yogurt has become my dessert. So I have a cereal bar in the morning. Does that count?
What about you, Cameron? Do you eat?
I do now. I didn't used to. I used to think, okay, well, I wake up, I'm not really hungry. It's best just to skip it, wait till lunch or dinner. But now I'm very conscious of making sure I have just something like oatmeal with a banana that will be satiating, but not so much that it's too much.
Yeah, I have to eat breakfast or I throw up. I am a must eat breakfast kind of person. I can't delay my breakfast too long or I get sick.
What do you usually eat for breakfast?
Usually it's yogurt. Okay. But it's like a high protein yogurt. Mm-hmm. And I really like it. Yeah.
That's good. You know, I have a thing. I love cereal on the weekends. And there's different types of cereal. And I don't just mean like you've got your Cheerios and then you've got, you know, Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I mean, there's breakfast cereals, there's meal cereals, there's snack cereals, and then there's dessert cereals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but sometimes I really do have like dessert cereal for breakfast. So I probably could cut that out and lose.
Yeah. Well, I only mention all the breakfast stuff just because I think that really does highlight how different people react differently to food in general. Like some people are like, ugh, I can't eat breakfast. I feel sick if I eat breakfast. I'm the other way. Exactly. I have to have breakfast or I feel sick.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of science now, too, that you shouldn't eat past a certain point, like maybe 7 or 8 o'clock. Don't eat anything more after that. But again, it's really just about everybody individually. And I think the book does a good job of addressing that, but also just making you aware that everybody is different. And it's really, I mean, we know that, like I said, but we don't always think about that. We don't always think that, okay, if I'm going to exercise 5 hours a day, I'm going to see the same results as somebody who exercises the same amount. But it's just not the case. You know, everybody can do things differently to account for those differences.
Yeah, every human body is different.
Yes.
From other human bodies, every single one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're a pretty impressive array of differences.
Yeah. In the end. Yeah. Maybe identical twins accepted, but they still have differences. Yeah. There are still differences, even with twins.
Well, thanks, Cameron. That sounds good, especially if for people who want to maybe go down a bikini size or something exactly. like that. So as I mentioned, I'm going to talk about Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuiston. And I'm not sure I'm getting her name right. She's a brand new author on the scene. And anybody who knows me knows that I am... romance crazy. I love romantic stories. Give me anything, but if it doesn't have a romantic subplot, there's a good chance you've lost me already. I do make some exceptions, but I'm a big romance fan. So when I saw the title, I was like, oh, that's a cute title. And then I saw the cover and I thought, oh, that's a cute cover. And then I read the description and I can't wait to read this. So I got my hands on it as quickly as I possibly could. And there's a certain amount of worry that comes along with building something up in your mind before you actually experience it. So, you know, a book or a movie, if you're very, very excited about it, certainly has the potential to let you down. And so I had a little bit of apprehension because I knew that I was building this book up before I'd experienced any of this writer's writing, before I'd, you know, seen anything more than a description. And let me just say, it exceeded my expectations.
Awesome.
It's, like I said, it is a romance story. So if that's not for you, then, you know, don't bother. But it is also very, very humorous. It's very fun. It's very real. It takes place mostly in Washington, D.C. The main character is Alex, and he is the son of the fictional Madam President, actually. So he is the first son. He has a sister, and he's very close with his sister and the granddaughter of the fictional Vice President. They're the golden trio, sort of the book. They're always together. They're best friends. They adventure in the world while also trying to keep their private lives private. They are very much in the public eye. And Alex is certain that his mortal enemy is the Crown Prince of England. And he just can't stand him and his smug face. And they get into a bit of a, not a brawl, but a bit of a throw hands situation at a royal wedding. It's Henry's older brother's wedding. And it's a PR nightmare, of course, because, again, first son, Prince of England, trouble ensues. So they're frantic. They're like, you guys are going to make this right. You're going to pretend to be best friends, and you're going to figure it out, and you're going to make the world believe that this was all just a misunderstanding.
Because, like, we're allies. So
right.
Like,
and it's election year. So this can't be. Your mom is trying to get her second term. You got to fix this. And I'm a big fan of the fake relationship trope. That's one of my absolute favorites. Well, obviously, this is a little bit different because they're told they're going to be friends. But it still has that kind of forced togetherness feel to it. Well, in the course of pretending to be friends, they become friends. And then in the course of becoming friends, Alex realizes that his feelings may be a little more complicated than he realized. And as it turns out, the prince has been in love with him all along. And this happens in the first few chapters, so I'm not giving too much away. The rest unfolds from there. But my favorite part was definitely the part about turkeys. And I won't say too much, but cornbread is very scary. And he's a turkey. Let me just clarify.
If you're a turkey, cornbread is scary.
Yeah. So it's very funny, very lighthearted. A lot of the plot is driven around Alex learning about himself and around his connections with his family and how those have changed and adjusted. There's a little bit about hero worship that, you know, he has to come to terms with, that people are not always the shining examples of, you know, humanity that we think they are. There's a lot about the perception of people around you and how you cope with those things. There's a lot about tradition and the conflict sometimes between who you are and who the world wants you to be. And it's very endearing and sweet. And I was just very emotional and between the laughing fits through the whole thing. But the quote I want to leave you with is actually a quote from the author in the final part of the book. It's just kind of her talking about why she wrote it. And it says, "To every person in search of somewhere to belong who happened to pick up this book, I hope you find a place in here. Even if just for a few pages, you are loved. I wrote this book for you. Keep fighting. Keep making history. Keep looking after one another."
That's awesome.
It is.
So I really very much enjoyed it. And I hope you will too.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of humor as well as a romance.
Yes, absolutely. It's definitely the lighthearted side for the most part, though. I mean, some very serious things, of course, go down over the course of the book. Family betrayal and stiff upper lips and that sort of thing.
Is there a happy ending?
I wouldn't like it if there wasn't. Okay. I take that back. But sincerely, there is a very happy ending.
Good.
That's great. Yeah, I sometimes need warnings on the front covers of the book. This ends sad. Yeah. This ends depressing. I'm like, I don't need that in my life right now. Do you understand what my life is like?
I refuse to like read anything that I think is going to be too sad for me, which is almost everything. I can deal with a somewhat unhappy ending if it's still a hopeful ending.
Yeah.
I do love a hopeful ending.
All right, well, you can find the titles that we talked about today. Just Your Type by Phil Catoodle, Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuiston, An Absolutely Remarkable Thing by Hank Green through the Charlotte Mecklenburg Library Catalog. Go to www.cmlibrary.org and choose the green catalog button. You can search by title, author, or keyword. You will then see all the available formats, print, ebooks, audiobooks. If it's not at your branch, you can place a hold to have it sent there.
Thank you again for joining us for You've Got to Read This. We hope we've given you some good discussion and some ideas for new material to read. Look for upcoming episodes on the digital branch at digitalbranch.cmlibrary.org. You can scroll down and select Listen Now for You've Got to Read This. Visit our library's website, of course, at cmlibrary.org, and check out the catalog and the resource pages. You can also find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. #CMLibrary and @CMLibrary.